Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It seems clear now that whatever it can pass on health care, the Obama White House is going to declare victory and move on. How much or little real reform that means is a subject of harsh debate and recrimination right now in Washington. Howard Dean says the current bill is simply not enough. It's not reform. It would do more harm than good. And everyone wants to know who put Joe Lieberman in charge. This hour on Point, Howard Dean and more on the Senate's final health care showdown. You can join the conversation with all that's come and gone from the health care reform effort. Would you vote for it or against it? Is this history being made? Is it reform? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Howard Dean joins us in just a moment. Joining me now from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time Magazine. She's been following the long, fierce health care debate on Capitol Hill. Karen, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
So a lot of gnashing of teeth in this home stretch to what had been hoped to be a before Christmas health care bill. What has progressives, first of all, so up in arms in this week, Karen?
Well, I think that a lot of liberals have finally focused on what I think has been going on all year, which is that one by one, a lot of the things that they cared most about in the bill, specifically the public option, are being abandoned. That, I think this is something that the White House had signaled pretty much from the beginning, and that the signal had also been pretty strong in the Senate that this wasn't going to survive. But I think that now we've reached the point of confronting the reality of it. A lot of people are really disappointed.
Joe Lieberman, independent now of Connecticut, was on Face the Nation on CBS Sunday. After the public option came this possibility of a Medicare buy-in for certain age group of Americans. And there came Joe Lieberman's near veto.
Opposition to it has been growing as the week has gone on. Though I don't know exactly what's in it, from what I hear, I certainly would have a hard time voting for it because it has some of the same infirmities that the public option did. It will add taxpayer costs. It will add to the deficit. It's unnecessary.
Connecticut, one-time Democrat, now independent, but still part of that critical 60 votes necessary to get past a filibuster, Joe Lieberman there. Karen, what exactly did Joe Lieberman do this week, and how did it change the face of the legislation emerging?
Well, first of all, there was some irony to this because Joe Lieberman had actually supported this proposal some years back. This is an idea, this idea that people 55 and older who don't have health insurance elsewhere should be allowed to buy into Medicare is not a new idea. It's something that even that President Clinton had proposed. But Joe Lieberman essentially became kind of a moving target on, you know, what specifically his objections to the bill were. But he had said from the beginning that he could not support a so-called public option, a government-run alternative for people to buy health care if they don't have insurance. Mm. And I think ultimately he decided that this idea of a Medicare buy-in was just getting at the same thing by another means.
So that's off the table kind of single-handedly because every vote is so important here. President Obama had Democrats to the White House this week. And what's the message from the White House to people who are, some of whom are ready to jump out the window on this thing?
Well, the message from the White House was this opportunity is not going to come around again, that if Congress fails to pass some kind of health care reform bill now, it's going to be a decade or more before the country is capable of even looking at this problem again. I think, too, that, that the president was making an appeal to Democrats as well, that this issue is going to be a test of whether Democrats are capable of governing. It was just a year ago that the country decided to put Democrats in charge at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. And they have not faced any test as great as this one.
We're going to hear in just a moment from Howard Dean, who's saying no to the package that's emerging. But here's President Obama after his meeting on Tuesday with Senate Democrats to caucus on health care. At a press conference afterward, urged lawmakers to put aside differences, pass the bill.
Now, let's be clear. The final bill won't include everything that everybody wants. No bill can do that. But what I told my former colleagues today is that we simply cannot allow differences over individual elements of this plan to prevent us from meeting our responsibility to solve a longstanding and urgent problem for the American people.
We are, said the president, on the precipice of an achievement that's eluded Congresses and presidents for generations as he pressed for passage. Howard Dean joins us now from Washington, physician, former presidential candidate, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, former governor of Vermont, on the record saying we should kill the bill. Howard Dean, thanks for being here. You say this is not reform. Why not?
Well, unfortunately, it's not so much of a matter of what's not in the bill. Obviously, it's a minimal reform that way. And there are some good things in the bill. Expansion of Medicaid, not reform, but very important. Money for community health centers, money for prevention. Very good stuff. The problem is what is in the bill. What happens in Washington is in the last weeks before the legislation is ready to go, people focus so intensely on getting a bill that they want any bill. And they make short-term decisions about how to get votes, which then have very long-term policy implications. The long-term policy implication here is that we are going to be stuck with and forced to be into a private insurance system for our universal health care in this country. And that means, since there are very little controls on the private insurance industry, they will continue to take 10, 20, 30% off the top, give it to CEOs who are making $20 million a year. In my state of Vermont, where we did real reform 15 years ago, it could very well be undone by this. Our insurance companies could be driven out of our state or forced to comply with these federal rules, which are much weaker than the national rules. Give you a quick example. Everybody says, oh, the pre-existing conditions, this reform is great because it'll get rid of pre-existing conditions and people will be able to get health insurance. Well, not so fast. They charge you 50% more for pre-existing conditions, and they can charge you 300% more for age. So what? Tell me how it helps to get rid of the pre-existing condition discrimination if you can't afford the insurance. And again and again and again in this bill, we see the insurance companies have written the bill. You are required as an American, if this bill passes, to buy insurance and go through what you've been going through for the last from the insurance companies. We have no choice. You know, the way this bill originally started out, what the president campaigned on, is we would be able to make choices between the private and public sector. That's gone. I think this bill has become an insurance company bill. It certainly isn't reform. I don't actually say kill the bill. We certainly shouldn't vote for this bill. I'd say strip it down, keep the good stuff, and get all the insurance special interest stuff out of there because it's not serving us well. The same people who are blocking this bill have also happened to come from states where they've received huge contributions from the insurance industry. That is a big problem, and in special interests have poisoned health care reform.
But we're very late in the game here. Do you no longer health care reform, but do you see any chance of the wheel being turned here? I mean, it's very late.
There's a couple of options. First of all, one of the ones that's not likely is you could just kill this and start with reconciliation, which is what they should have done months ago in the House. And then
that is the budget
votes.
Writing process that lets them pass things with 51, not 60 votes.
That's right. And you can expand Medicare in that, which is the simplest and most reasonable reform. You can do that in reconciliation. You don't need anything else if you do that because you don't need all the insurance regulations because expansion of Medicare. Medicare is already community rating. It's already available to everybody who has pre-existing conditions. So it's a much better system than what we're talking about. So you could do that. Secondly, you could strip all the nonsense out of this bill, the special interest stuff. And boy, there is a lot of it. We haven't even scratched the surface of the special interest stuff in here. And send it back to the House. And hopefully the House bill, which was much better than the Senate bill turned out to be, they might pass it. I think that's unlikely because the same people who blocked the real reform in the Senate will block it again as it comes back through. And the other thing is, I think the president is wrong about not being able to do this for another decade. I think this is an emergency. People really do want a decent health care reform. Until the Senate made their changes in the last week, the polls were very much in favor of health care reform. Once they took the public option out, the floor fell out from under health care reform, as we saw in the NBC poll today. Come back. We could actually, if you started a bill and pass it in the fall of 2011 after a new Congress comes in, you could actually get insured faster than you would if the president signed this bill. This bill doesn't go into effect till 2014. Most people aren't going to get any health insurance, and of course it'll be twice as expensive then. And a Medicare buy-in would have gone into effect within months after the president signed it. So there is no percentage in supporting the Senate bill. It's a giveaway to the insurance companies, and it forces 35 million people in America who aren't giving money to the insurance companies now to give it to them so their CEOs can fly around in jets and make $20 million a year. That is not health care reform.
Karen Tumulty, the White House is really whipping the pony on this toward a vote and passage of what's there. Do you see any chance of the brakes being put on this, or is it going to be, here it is, vote up or down, and push it through and declare victory, that's it?
I think that, first of all, we haven't actually seen Harry Reid's bill, and at least the latest version of it. And also, more specifically, we have not seen what the Congressional Budget Office says Harry Reid's bill will cost. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a real gut check moment, I think, for a number of wavering senators. And it appears right now that, you know, most everyone's eyes are on Ben Nelson, who says he would kill the whole thing if he can't get a deal that he likes on abortion.
That is restricting funding for abortion.
Right. And but to me, this is looking like, yes, if I had to predict, I'd predict that they're probably going to pull it over the line. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it by Christmas Eve, but they are getting very, very close.
Howard Dean, do you have any doubt that the White House is going to push this through now? You'd like it not to happen, but is it going to happen anyway?
They may well do it. I think it's going to be a terrible cost for the Democrats. I mean, their base is already totally demoralized. We saw in 2009 that the folks that elected President Obama did not come out, and we lost governorships and county executives. Unfortunately, I think you're going to see more of that. When people find out what's in this bill, they're going to be outraged. Outraged. In my state, they're certainly going to be outraged. Our state was the first state to report and to vote for President Obama. When they find out that this has gutted their health care reform that we've had there for 15 years, I think it's going to be an enormous problem.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's happening with health care reform. Howard Dean is with us. He says it's gutted. Forget it. This bill, anyway. No thanks. The White House says it's now or never to do what can be done. Howard Dean, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, joins us from Washington, D.C., as does Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine, who has covered this rough and tumble debate forward to back. Here's a little bit of Senator Jay Rockefeller. This is early in the week, Sunday, saying he thinks the health care bill will pass.
I feel that way, that it can pass or will pass, because, as I say, I think the closer you get, the more you have to look at the whole bill, the more likely you are to say, I have to do this for the nation.
And here's President Obama again on Tuesday talking up the historic significance of pushing it through.
From the discussions we had, it's clear that we are on the precipice of an achievement that's eluded Congresses and presidents for generations, an achievement that will touch the lives of nearly every American. There are still some differences that have to be worked on. This was not a roll call. This was a broad-based discussion about how we move forward.
We'll hear more from Karen Tumulty and Howard Dean. Let's hear from our listeners, Kate in Somerville, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I'm a lifelong Democrat. As I said, I was in Europe when McGovern was in the election, and I traveled to my embassy to vote for him. But I have never seen such gutless, unprincipled people in my life. Howard Dean is 100% correct about this. They talk about us being able to, we'll be able to get the guaranteed coverage. They're not telling us what the insurance companies are going to charge you for that coverage. I'm 58 years old. I have stage 4 cancer. I'm a former nurse. I've done this for 30 years. If it wasn't for one of the hospitals in Boston, I'd be dead by now. And this is absolutely unprincipled what they're doing to this health care bill.
Kate, we've got the perspective. Let me get one more here from Burlington, Vermont. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This proposal now is ditching the left, and if we go forward with mandates without affordability, we're going to kill the Democratic Party for an entire generation. LBJ used to say, you got to dance with the one that brung you, and I think we need to pull this bill. I would fire Rahm Emanuel and just get back to some consensus-building measures like the pre-existing conditions and pay caps and whatnot, just as a trust builder, and go forward from there.
Fire Rahm Emanuel and go forward from there. Carrington, will you take us back here? How are you reading now the White House support for this? Barack Obama, as a senator running for Senate, certainly had bigger ideas. On the campaign trail, had bigger ideas. But does it look as though this was kind of the game plan from the beginning? He's been very loath to commit to details this year, but sort of put it out there, get what they could, and declared a victory sort of no matter what it was.
Well, that's maybe a little bit oversimplifying it, but I, you know, it's interesting. I decided to go back about 6 weeks ago and reread the speech that then Senator Barack Obama gave in Iowa City in May of 2007 when he announced his health care plan. And while the public option was in the plan itself, it did not even get so much as a mention in the speech. And yet, you know, this has become an issue that has really driven this bill politically. And this has come as a great surprise to the White House, because I do believe they essentially saw this as a feature of the bill that they had included to kind of appease the people who really wanted a single payer system. But it was one that I think they were from the outset set ready to bargain away. And, you know, somehow that message did not get through to some of their more loyal supporters.
Howard Dean, how do you read the way the White House has handled this long and rough road this year? They clearly had some kind of game plan at the get-go. How do you read what's happened? What's transpired here?
Well, Tom, first let me respond to Kate, a 58-year-old woman with cancer.
Stage four. Mm-hmm.
If she did not have health insurance, she couldn't afford it under this plan that's in the Senate. Because she would legally be allowed to get it. They couldn't reject her because she had cancer and she was 58 years old. But they could charge her up to 300 or 350% more than an average person, so she couldn't afford it. So these are so-called insurance reforms. You know, Elizabeth mentioned, well, let's go back and do the pre-existing conditions. The problem is we've done what the Senate's willing to do on pre-existing conditions. It doesn't work. Because for everything they do that like that that gets the headlines that people, politicians talk about, oh, this is what's in the bill, there's fine print in there that says you can't use it because the insurance companies are going to make so much money out of it. And they don't want you. The insurance companies are looking for ways already to get out of this. And then fortunately, they have a lot of friends in the Senate that have helped them do that. What do I think went wrong? I don't know. Look, I've vowed, and I've pretty much stuck to it. It's not so easy given my temperament. Not to make this a personal fight, not to go back and examine who did what and when they were wrong and whose fault this all is and should we beat up on Joe Lieberman. Other people can do that. This is about whether we're going to have a decent health care system or not. You know, I've been doing this for a long, long time. We've actually got a pretty darn good health care system in Vermont with all these things in it that didn't give them. You know, in Vermont, the insurance companies can charge 20% more for pre-existing conditions or age. That's all they can charge. That's going to be gotten rid of by this bill, because you can buy insurance from Texas, which will run our insurance companies out of business, and then you'll be charged Texas rates, which are high rates and lousy benefits. You make the insurance company, insurance commissioner in Texas, the de facto insurance commissioner in Vermont. We don't want that. So, look, I don't know what went wrong and what they did, and I think they didn't understand that this isn't the left. This is not about progressives and the left. The core belief of the Democratic Party is that you ought to have a public option. And most of them want a single payer. Things have changed so much in medicine in the last 15 years. The average primary care physician in America today wants a single payer. A single payer. I hated Medicare when I was practicing medicine. But Medicare hadn't gotten all that much better. But the insurance companies are so abusive and so horrible to both patients and doctors that the doctors have given up. The average primary care physician in the United States of America makes less money than the average primary care physician who works for the National Health Service in Great Britain. That is the – I don't think these folks in the White House had any idea how damaged the system was and how deep the anger was among core American people. This is not left and right. Conservatives hate insurance companies, except for the ones in the Senate, of course. It's really, really tough out there. I just don't think they understood just how tough it was.
Karen, what about the senators who are standing up and saying, well, it may not have everything we'd like, but we're prepared to do this? And you just heard Senator Rockefeller there saying, you know, for the good of the country, here we go. What's the calculus they're making? What are the contents in the bill emerging that they're looking at that make them say it's worth it, even if it's not perhaps everything they wanted?
Well, I think it begins with the 37 or so million people who don't have coverage, who would have coverage under this bill. It's, if you, you know, the estimates are that it would get us pretty close to universal health care coverage in this country. And while Governor Dean talks about the mandate, the requirement that people go out and buy coverage, one, the most expensive element of this bill is help for people to people who make up to 400% of poverty to go out and buy that coverage. It is very expensive, and a lot of people are afraid it could, you know, help break the bank for the government. But those two are two things that this bill does, and I think most people would say does effectively. It's when you get into the question of what it would do to bring down the forces that have been driving up health care costs across the country, health care premiums and the costs that are charged by hospitals and for drugs. That's, I think, where you get into a lot more discussion and a lot more reservations among economists who've studied this very closely.
Let's get a call from Vaveen in Nashville, Tennessee. Vaveen, you're on the air.
I am a registered nurse, and I work in Nashville, Tennessee, but I grew up in the Canadian healthcare system where I did my nursing, and I was so excited when we were going to get a public option or it was on the table, because my experience here has been that people have deferred chemotherapy because they can't even afford the copay, or they don't want to leave their families penniless. We're having people putting off screening colonoscopies because they, again, can't even afford the copay that the insurance companies demand to have this screening measure done. And, you know, we see people coming in, as this one caller said, with, you know, stage 3 and stage 4 cancer that could have been prevented. There's problems in the Canadian system. I'm certainly the first to recognize that. But with all the warts, the single-payer system is really an effective way to get good preventative health care.
Vaveen, we've got it, but we're not close to that now, not in this package as it's emerging, obviously. Let's go to Greenwich, Connecticut, Joe Lieberman country, or has been. John, you're on the air.
Hi there. This is a very important question, because this is one of the reasons that Obama was elected, and it is important that this gets done right. The public payer option, the single payer option, has got to be on the table. To have all of this taken off and to lose it is going to not change anything. When you first opened the show, you asked kind of how did Joe Lieberman get at the crux of all this as an independent and as the 60th mm-hmm. vote, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And it just seems so narcissistic on his part to act as the one who wants to have all the power, because he's finally the last vote to be counted. And the sooner we can get rid of him, the better, in my mind at this point.
How do you read? He says he's afraid it would drive the deficit up if you've got the Medicare buy-in option in there. How do you read his motivation here, John?
That is only because of who he's listening to in terms of tax policy. as plain and simple, he has thrown his soul over to those who have billions of dollars, and he has left all of the rest of those who work for those people behind. And it is crying shame what has happened to his own soul, and it's gone. It's absolutely gone. The whole concept of Joe Lieberman being out for anybody except for Joe Lieberman has disappeared along with the dodo.
Well, let's give him the option of hanging on to his soul, but what about hanging on to some of the things you care about here, Howard Dean? Do you see reconciliation as still a real option here? Is anybody really talking about it? That is, put aside that we need 60 votes, go with the mechanism essentially meant for writing up budgets. Many will say it's not even appropriate here, and blast something through with 51 votes?
Well, I don't know if it's a real option. It just depends on the guts of the Congress. Look, if George Bush had been president of the United States and the Republicans had been in charge, their version of reform would have been passed already. They didn't hesitate. We're not tough enough in the Democratic Party. Now, we don't have to be mean, but we got to be much tougher.
George Bush used it for his tax packages.
He used it for his tax packages. Mm-hmm. Reconciliation has been used 23 times in the last 20 years or so to get pieces of legislation through. Reconciliation is actually really easy to use for health care.
Well, except Governor, I mean, the argument, and I have not talked to anyone in a decision-making position this week who thinks it really is on the table. there are a couple of problems. One is that they don't think that essentially anything that is done through reconciliation has to address the deficit directly, which mm-hmm. means they don't see how on a bill and this is very technical, and I apologize okay. to your listeners, but how they could get some things in like these insurance exchanges.
I can tell you exactly how you can do it. First of all, you don't need the insurance exchanges until 2014. You can do that later, and it's not controversial. All you have to do to get health insurance through in reconciliation is expand Medicare.
Well, the other thing
And you can pay for it by taking the $500 billion of savings, which the president found to help pay for it, and use that. It is so straightforward and so simple. And I think you can get the votes for it.
Well, the other technical problem with doing it through reconciliation, right now they've had a struggle to get a bill that is deficit neutral over 10 years. If you do it in reconciliation, that window is going to shrink to 5 years, which is, again, it would be a really difficult bill to sort of make balance fiscally. At least that's the argument that I'm hearing.
It would not. I agree. It would not be as far reaching. But it would be real reform. The reason I was willing to settle for opening Medicare for people down to 55 is I knew that that wasn't going to solve a whole lot of problems, but it was the beginning of a direction where we could pursue real reform. The problem with the Senate bill is it takes us in the opposite direction. I've said this before. In the last week, when people are scrambling, they make decisions based on how to get votes. They don't make decisions on what's best for the long-term future of the country. They don't think that way. What can we do to add this? How can we take away that? How can we get the health insurance lobby to shut up? How can we get the doctors to like this? How can we get the durable medical equipment people on board? By the time you add all that stuff up, you really don't have a health care bill anymore, and that's what's happened here.
Let me bring into this conversation David Cutler. He joins us from Harvard University, professor of economics there, the original architect of Barack Obama's health care plan in the 2008 campaign, has continued to advise senators on the bill. David Cutler, thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Howard Dean, as you have heard and no doubt know, is very critical of what's emerging here. The White House says, look, this is a once-in-a-generation chance to act. Where do you come down, David? You were there early on. You see what's emerging now. What do you make of what ought to happen?
This is a once-in-a-generation chance. We blew it 16 years ago, and it took us that long to come back to it. What's on the table is a bill that will insure 30 million people. It will lower premiums for everyone. It will provide security to 300 million Americans who worry that they are one illness away from bankruptcy. That's what we have the option to do. It's not perfect. I would like to have a public option as well. But if we're going to hold out for that, then we're dooming ourselves to another 20 years of no progress.
Howard Dean says it's basically a giveaway to the insurance industry. What do you say to that, David?
It's actually, all of the estimates suggest that premiums will be lower and that we will save money overall, and insurers will have to compete for people rather than just choosing which people they want to insure or which people they won't. I expect that the rules of the game will be very, very different for insurance companies.
In a way that moves power toward the consumer, toward individual citizens?
What this bill does is it tells insurance companies the game is over. You cannot pick and choose who you want to insure. You must take people. You must cover them. You must provide the benefits you say you're going to cover. You cannot have caps. You cannot have limits. You must do what we think insurance ought to do, not what you find to be in your best short-term interest.
Howard Dean, that sounds like reform.
I have no doubt that was the original intention of the bill. But this bill now looks like what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts, except, of course, it's much more larded up with insurance stuff. The insurance premiums in Massachusetts certainly haven't gone down. I would respectfully disagree. I was a big supporter of the president's bill, a big supporter of the bill that you designed, but I'm not anymore because this isn't what you designed. It doesn't give us the options we want. It forces us to sign up for insurance companies where we don't feel like paying for the CEO's plane and his $20 million salary. And it takes choices away from the American people that we should have had, that we were promised on the campaign. And it's got tons of special interests. The good stuff that controls health care costs. Karen and I were talking about this before the show. Bundled payments, medical homes, accountable care organizations, all stuff in pilot projects. It can't be done without congressional permission, which means the same people who blocked the reforms are going to block them again.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's happening with health care reform in the home stretch here. Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine joins us from Washington, D.C. Howard Dean is here, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, quite critical of what's unfolding. David Cutler is with us, professor of economics at Harvard. He was there with Barack Obama, helping draft his original health care plan in the 2008 campaign, has continued to stay very close to this. He says this is worth going with. Let's get a call from Michigan. Clinton in Birmingham, Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
You're welcome.
You know, I think something needs to be done. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I disagree with Howard Dean. I'm tired of the litmus tests that politicians are applying to everything. There must be a single-payer system. There can't be a single-payer system. There must be a public option. There can't be. It must cover abortion. It can't cover abortion. Look, there's a whole lot more to that bill. And in this week's New Yorker, Atul Gawande, a Boston physician, writes about, he tries to remind us that this bill is about cutting costs. And he points out a whole raft of provisions in the bill that will allow the government, allow the healthcare system to test ways of cutting costs. And he likens it to what we did with agriculture back around the turn of the century. And I just want to remind people that there's a lot more to it than these few issues that seem to get all the attention. Take a look at that article in the New Yorker, and it gives us some hope.
Clinton, we're all for hope. David Cutler, do you see this? Atul Gawande's point is you kind of dive in, you start where you can, however modestly, you experiment and move from there. Howard Dean says you set up something here that pushes everything into private hands more or less forever and cuts off options. How do you look at it, David?
Oh, I think we're clearly going to come back to healthcare many times. I think what we need to do is get ourselves going on the right path. And I understand that Governor Dean thinks it's the wrong path. But what we have to do is we have to first get people into the system, and second, set up mechanisms so that we will be able to slow the growth of healthcare costs. And this bill does both of those things. And then just like with agriculture or just like with Social Security, we're going to come back to it many times and say, what do we need to fix? Where were we right? Where were we wrong? And how are we going to get it better?
Howard Dean, how about it? Look at it as an iterative process.
Because normally I'm very sympathetic with the caller from Michigan. I think, as you know, the architect of the 50-state strategy, I wanted to get the Democratic Party away from litmus tests. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned Atul Gawande, who is, I think, if not the greatest source on this issue of anybody in the country, certainly one of them. His article in the June New Yorker is one of the best things I've read in 10 years on healthcare. Mm-hmm. But here's what happened.
All the things
that Atul Gawande wanted to do, gone. The Independent Medical Advisory Council, it can't have an effect. It can't make a recommendation unless Medicare costs go up greater than the rate of medical inflation. And the other things he mentioned, bundled payments, medical homes, accountable care organizations, can't be put back in without the approval of this very same senator.
Howard Dean, what's a medical home? What's a medical home?
A medical home is a requirement. It's a very, very good idea, which is now, of course, subject to the insurance company senators. It's a very good idea which requires people to have a doctor or a practice where somebody knows them.
A base.
So they don't randomly call emergency rooms and specialists and so forth and so on. It's a very smart one of the things that you need to do to control costs.
Karen Tumulty, do you see this? And again, we don't know exactly what this is until it comes out from the Senate and then they work with the House. But do you see us headed towards something that can be a kind of base for further iteration, further change and evolution as we go forward?
Well, I do agree with Governor Dean that you know, what happens in the legislative process is really not pretty to watch. And a lot of the stuff that has gone on in the fine print of the bill has, in fact, attempted to sort of undermine what the bill's actual goals are. But does that mean that this entire exercise is not worth doing? You know, that, again, if you're somebody in this country who doesn't have health insurance, this would get you covered. And, you know, if
there was money.
Well, but for a lot of people, that's an important enough goal. I would, though, and I don't want to argue with a Harvard professor here, but I would take issue with one thing that David Cutler said, which is he said that the studies have shown that this will lower premiums. For people who don't have insurance now, And for people who buy on the what they call the individual market because they're not covered by their employer, this would actually increase premiums, but they would get a lot better insurance than they currently have, and they would get a lot more help from the government to pay for it, which is why their out-of-pocket costs would go down, even though the actual premiums would go up, unless Dr. Cutler, unless I'm misunderstanding
this. Dr. Cutler, can you explain that for us? Karen says, if you're not insured, this will help you get coverage. Howard Dean says, if there's money, what are the steps emerging here for the great millions of uncovered, what they would face?
Let me pick up on a couple of those. First, for people who are uninsured, they would get insurance and they would get financial help paying for it from the government if they're of low or moderate incomes or middle incomes. For some people, their premiums would go up. Those tend to be people who have very poor coverage, for example, policies with a $10,000 deductible, so that their out-of-pocket costs will go down, but their premium payments will go up. Thinking about their total health spending will go down. For the vast bulk of people who have private insurance now that's at least fairly generous, that is, they work for large or medium-sized companies that are not providing just very skimpy benefits, the estimates are that their premiums will decline because of the efficiencies that can be saved, because we'll get rid of some of the shifting of costs of the uninsured onto them. So for most people, with the exception of those who don't have insurance and are not spending much, their total costs of medical care should decline.
But now, could I just ask?
Yes, Howard Dean.
Dr. Cutler, why is it that that was not the experience in Massachusetts, which this is basically modeled after?
Actually, in Massachusetts, individual premiums declined by an enormous amount when they moved into the exchange. The total costs were higher because so many more people took up coverage than we had expected to take up coverage. But the actual premiums matched what we thought they would, and in some cases were even a bit lower.
Let me get a call, if I may, from a doctor in Virginia, Harrisonburg, Virginia. Omar, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Omar. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that Mr. Dean is that Governor Dean is very correct, because I did work overseas for 6 years in a socialized medicine situation,
yep,
like Britain and Canada, and it was much easier for doctors to work. It was, I think, much better for patients. Here, I'm losing patients because they can't afford health care. I think in particular of a taxi driver who didn't want to go on disability, though he qualified. And because he worked as a taxi driver, he couldn't afford insurance, put off his testing, and he's now dead because of it. That's our U.S. health care system, and I think it's very sick. And I'm very disappointed that we don't at least have a public health option. I think it's a huge mistake, and I think we're going way in the wrong direction again.
Omar, I appreciate your call. Let's go to Riverdale, Iowa, and Ron. Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. The more I learn, the more I discover that this is much like George Bush's entrance into Iraq. It's the wrong war. It's the wrong place and the wrong time. Governor Dean is right. We probably can't afford this now. Certainly our grandchildren and children won't afford it in the future. We've got to do much like Canada did. We've got to work this out through the states in those laboratories of experimentation and reasonably goodwill. And so until that happens, or until Governor Dean's process that began with the people speaking by doing, and in the future doing away with special interest by having campaigns funded by the people, we're just on a downhill slide. Wrong.
Ron, we've got it. Let me get one more. Thank you, Ron, from Rocky Hill, Connecticut. Candace, you're on the air, Candace.
Hello. First of all, I want to say I'm so embarrassed by being from Joe Lieberman's state. But what I really wanted to ask is, shouldn't something as important as the public option been put to a national referendum? for the people to vote on? And could something like that still be done?
That's kind of outside practice as I know it.
I'll just answer Governor that Dean? One really quickly. I think that much as I love the public option, and the public option would clearly pass because it's running around 59%, I hate referendum government. Because if you do that with a public option, somebody will put somebody's civil rights in a national referendum, and they might not do so well. Referendums have destroyed the state of California. So even much as I love the public option and much as I know there's huge public support for it, that would probably not be the tactic that I would resort to in order to get it in the bill.
Karen, can you describe for us exactly where things stand now? I mean, what are the chances that anything will be passed by Christmas, passed at all? There's still no guarantee of even what the White House is pushing for going through, is there?
Well, I think that if the Senate does pass this, and right now I'd bet that they are going to pass something, at that point, that's the key vote. Because once they go to conference, they are not going to produce something from a House and Senate conference that is not going to pass the Congress. This is the crunch time here that we're looking at here in the next week and a half.
Does that mean that in conference they will not be able to make major changes because those deals will already have been cut before it gets through the Senate here?
I think that probably whatever comes out of conference is going to look a lot like the Senate bill.
So we're very nearly where we're going to be then. David Cutler, do you see any more room for negotiation here? And what's your level of confidence that this finally gets through and when?
There's actually an interesting thing that's gone on. Even while the Senate has been dropping the public option, which I think we all agree we would like, even as it's been doing that, on other areas, the bill has actually gotten better, but somewhat in a quieter way. So 11 freshman Democratic senators introduced amendments that would really strengthen the ability to make health system change. Senator Rockefeller has introduced an amendment that would beef up the Medicare board that would help to make Medicare be a more progressive, smarter purchaser. So I think there's a loss on some things, but the bill is actually getting a lot stronger in other areas. And I think that's going to help to bring people over so that people feel like they're comfortable doing what is a really very major change. And I think the Senate looks on track. People look like they're getting more comfortable with the ideas in it and passing it by hopefully Christmas. And if they do that, then I think the odds, as Karen said, are very good that there will be a final bill that comes out for the president's signature in a few weeks from there.
Howard Dean, so what does that mean? Are you whistling in the wind with your criticism here? Is it already sort of up on the rails and going and, you know, done deal?
There is, as you now know, an enormous amount of public outrage about this bill. We know the conservatives haven't liked it. Now the Democrats aren't so crazy about it. And I think my hope is that this bill will be fixed in the Senate, that as they try to put together these votes, they understand that they've got to take some stuff out of here that the insurance companies put in, that they can't, for example, as I said before, as Karen pointed out to me earlier, the Commission on Cost Controls isn't gutted as it is today. Some of these things that these folks are suggesting. Senator Rockefeller had a great amendment, which got knocked out by the CBO, which would have made this all work, even in the private sector, but that got knocked out. So this bill is really damaged, and it needs to be scaled back. We need to focus on the things that we can do, just like the gentleman from Iowa was talking about, something that's affordable, something that really does expand care. We need to not try to swallow the whole thing at once, because obviously that failed in the Senate. They tried to swallow the whole thing at once. I'm sorry they weren't able to do it. I was very supportive of all the things they were trying to do, but finally they just got overtaken by the special interests. I hope they strip the bill down. I hope it goes to conference committee. I'd like to see some kind of a bill, but not one that that does what the Senate bill does.
But how do you make those changes when any single senator, including Senator Lieberman, because of these need for 60 votes to force cloture, can say no thanks, and they've got pretty full control with the pretty full leverage?
Well, the kinds of changes that we're trying to make would presumably not offend, we could presumably get 60 votes for. Basic insurance changes without the ability to, allowing insurance companies to collect 300% if you're older of the normal premium or 50% more if you have a pre-existing condition. things like the exchanges that they have in Massachusetts, which is actually a very good way to buy health insurance. We, of course, would like a public option or something else in there, but that's not in there. But it's a good way, regardless of the fact that the, or the problems they're having with cost control in Massachusetts, they've achieved 97% health care coverage. That's a very good thing. Bernie Sanders has got some money in there for community health centers. That's going to be the backbone of the health care center over the time as we move along. Tom Harkin's got money in for wellness and prevention. That, everybody agrees on the Democratic side that those things should go in. And I think we ought to leave those in and pass a bill with that stuff in it and get all this insurance, these insurance giveaways out of there. And for God's sakes, get the individual mandate out of there, because to force people to buy insurance companies' products when they charge more than they have to and you know, they're just not treating people well is, I think it's an outrage. If you had the public option where people didn't have to, weren't forced to do it, that's one thing. But now they're forced to do it. You pay a fine if you don't contribute to somebody's $20 million a year salary. I think that's an outrage.
Karen Tumulty, that's a long a laundry list of things Howard Dean would like to see. Do you see that kind of flexibility still in the system with the single vote veto essentially from senators here?
It's all of this would happen to happen in a very short time, right. And there are a lot of pressures right now against it. I think the momentum right now is to just get this thing over the finish line.
David Cutler, do you see much more room for negotiation here?
No, I think they've reached the end of what they're likely to do in this round. I think we're going to keep coming back to the issue, but for this round, I think the window is closing.
Well, there it is. At a historic moment, whatever you think of the outcome, we're grateful to each of you for being with us today with your perspectives. Karen Tumulty with Time Magazine, it's always great to have your reporting behind us. Karen, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
David Cutler, professor of economics at Harvard University, author of Your Money or Your Life. David, professor, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And Howard Dean, Governor Dean, thank you as always for being with us today.
Always a delight. Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.